As they approached the Campanile, they passed a line of caricature artists standing at their easels, sketching garish cartoons of tourists. A teenage boy grinding on a skateboard. A horse-toothed girl wielding a lacrosse stick. A pair of honeymooners kissing on a unicorn. Langdon found it amusing somehow that this activity was permitted on the same sacred cobbles where Michelangelo had set up his own easel as a boy. Continuing quickly around the base of Giotto's bell tower, Langdon and Sienna turned right, moving out across the open square directly in front of the cathedral. Here the crowds were thickest, with tourists from around the world aiming camera phones and video cameras upward at the colorful main facade. Langdon barely glanced up, having already set his sights on a much smaller building that had just come into view. Positioned directly opposite the front entrance of the cathedral stood the third and final structure in the cathedral complex. It was also Langdon's favorite, the Baptistry of San Giovanni. Adorned in the same polychromatic facing stones and striped pilasters as the cathedral, the baptistry distinguished itself from the larger building by its striking shape, a perfect octagon. Resembling a layer cake, some had claimed, the eight-sided structure consisted of three distinct tiers that ascended to a shallow white roof. Langdon knew the octagonal shape had nothing to do with aesthetics and everything to do with symbolism. In Christianity, the number eight represented rebirth and recreation. The octagon served as a visual reminder of the 6 days of God's creation of heaven and earth, the one day of Sabbath, and the eighth day upon which Christians were reborn or recreated through baptism. Octagons had become a common shape for baptistries around the world. While Langdon considered the baptistry one of Florence's most striking buildings, he always found the choice of its location a bit unfair. This baptistry, nearly anywhere else on earth, would be the center of attention. Here, however, in the shadow of its two colossal siblings, the baptistry gave the impression of being the runt of the litter. "Until you step inside," Langdon reminded himself, picturing the mind-boggling mosaic work of the interior, which was so spectacular that early admirers claimed the baptistry ceiling resembled heaven itself. "If you know where to look," Langdon had wryly told Sienna, "Florence is heaven." For centuries, this eight-sided sanctuary had hosted the baptisms of countless notable figures, Dante among them. "I shall return as poet at my baptismal font." Because of his exile, Dante had never been permitted to return to this sacred site, the place of his baptism, although Langdon felt a rising hope that Dante's death mask, through the unlikely series of events that had occurred last night, had finally found its way back in his stead. "The baptistry," Langdon thought. "This has to be where Ignazio hid the mask before he died." He recalled Ignazio's desperate phone message, and for a chilling moment, Langdon pictured the corpulent man clutching his chest, lurching across the piazza into an alley, and making his final phone call after leaving the mask safely inside the baptistry. "The gates are open to you." Langdon's eyes remained fixed on the baptistry as he and Sienna snaked through the crowd. Sienna was moving now with such nimble eagerness that Langdon nearly had to jog to keep up. Even at a distance, he could see the baptistry's massive main doors glistening in the sun. Crafted of gilded bronze and over 15 feet tall, the doors had taken Lorenzo Ghiberti more than 20 years to complete. They were adorned with 10 intricate panels of delicate biblical figures of such quality that Giorgio Vasari had called the doors undeniably perfect in every way and the finest masterpiece ever created. It had been Michelangelo, however, whose gushing testimonial had provided the doors with a nickname that endured even today. Michelangelo had proclaimed them so beautiful as to be fit for use as the gates of paradise.